Hey guys, this is Mike Mahaffey, the old bastard BJJ guy, here for BJJ Metal Models. Back in my day, we had to walk uphill in the snow both ways to get to the academy just to learn some crappy technique from a random purple belt. You kids have it so easy, because now you can just subscribe to BJJ Metal Models Premium and get tons of great audio courses to learn new techniques, enhance your mindset, and entertain yourself. You can even get personalized rolling reviews from some of your favorite BJJ Metal Models coaches, including me. It's like having your own seminar, you spoiled little whippersnappers. So what are you waiting for? Subscribe to BJJ Metal Models Premium right now, get off my lawn, and go train.
Welcome to BJJ Mental Models, episode 263. I'm Steve Kwan. BJJ Mental Models is your guide to a conceptual and intelligent jiu-jitsu approach. Today, I am pleased to be joined by someone I have been wanting to have here for quite a while, Ms. Heather Morgan. Heather, how is it going?
Good. I'm good. How are you? I'm glad we could make this happen. I'm very excited.
Absolutely. I am also very excited. I am excited for a variety of reasons. First, to have you on here. Second, because the topic we're going to get into is ultra exciting to me. But maybe before we launch into a bunch of technical details, why don't you give yourself a quick intro for people who might just be hearing you for the first time?
Yeah, for sure. So like you said, I'm Heather Morgan. I am a black belt under Andre Galvao. I've been training jiu-jitsu for coming up on 10 years. I think my anniversary is this January. And the majority of that time I've been training at Otto's HQ here in San Diego. So I moved out here when I was still a white belt. And I've just been pursuing jiu-jitsu ever since. I kind of knew right when I started jiu-jitsu that it was my passion. So I wanted to get to a good spot, like get to a good academy and start training and start figuring out how to make it my, you know, my life, how to make money off of it, how to compete and all that good stuff. So
nice. So how do you split up your time then? Are you kind of going down that dual route where you're both a competitor and looking to build up the business side of things? Or are you currently focused on just one of those avenues or maybe something else I've missed entirely?
No. It's basically just balancing those two constantly, I feel like, which is definitely a struggle. Because I feel like for me and probably for a lot of jiu-jitsu people, the fun part of jiu-jitsu is the competing and just the training and just, you know, throwing yourself into the meat grinder and just doing all of that. But for me, I was doing that for the first few years, I would say up until like beginning of brown belt. And then I was kind of forced into sort of throwing myself into more of the business side of things because I had my first injury. So it was ended up being a really good thing because I started working more on like a social media presence, trying to think of other ways to make money, like making courses and learning how to edit and do all that side of things. So I would say I kind of had to go more into that area for a while until I was able to start training again. And I'm kind of right now coming out of like another injury. So I'm starting to sort of balance both of them again and work more on the training and the business side. I would like to get back to competing at some point, but right now just training and kind of building up my online business. So I feel like it's kind of always a balance and you sort of have like times where maybe you're competing more and times when maybe you're teaching more. So yeah, it's a balancing act for sure.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because in the last few episodes, we've actually had people on talking specifically about how to balance business and jiu-jitsu and how those two things can cross-pollinate and help each other. So yet another person here who is coming on this journey with us. Now, something that you mentioned is building up your social media. I love your social media. Yours is one of my favorites to follow. You and Dom Bell both have just amazing, intuitive, easy to grasp social media content. So if anyone wants something that's quickly scannable that you can actually learn from, I definitely recommend giving Heather a follow, as I always do. I'll put a link in the show notes here to your Instagram. While we're doing that, anything else you want to plug just to get it out of the way? Places where people should go if they want to learn from you?
Yeah. So I would say the big one is, like you said, my social media. I really try to put a bunch of free content on there, just quick things, quick tips, just easy to understand so people can learn very easily. And then I also have my YouTube channel. So I'm starting to put a lot more free content on there as well. So if you're more interested in like the long form, you want to really get into like the nitty gritty of a position and watch like a longer video, I would suggest going to my YouTube. The link is in my bio on my Instagram, or you can just hop on YouTube and search me and I'll pop up. And then I also have a couple courses for sale. Both of them you can find in my bio on Instagram. The link is in there. And I have right now a knee slice course, which is like my baby. I feel like I really love the knee slice. So that was kind of the first course I like wanted to do. So that one's up there and it's on sale right now for 52% off. So if you want to grab that, now is a good time. And then I also just threw up a really short close guard course, basically just going over kind of a pendulum sweep system. So it's very short, easy to digest. I know a lot of people don't have time to watch like a full blown instructional. So that one's a good quick one to kind of just add in a nice little system into your close guard game. So that one's up there too. And it's also on sale for 52% off. So yeah, check them out if you are interested.
Amazing. Well, as I always do, I will put those links in the bio, and I'm sure we'll get to that in a bit more detail at the end here. But you touched on what's going to be the topic of this episode here, your baby, and also maybe my baby as well, the knee slice. In my opinion, you know, if I had to go off to a desert island and I was only allowed to pack one jiu-jitsu guard pass, I would bring the knee slice. I personally feel it is the single best overall guard pass. If you're only ever going to learn one, just the versatility of the knee slice is amazing. It works for people of all body types, shapes, and sizes, all rule sets. It doesn't require a tremendous amount of athleticism. You can do it against big people. You can do it against small people. You can do it in the gi. You can do it in no gi. It is, in my opinion, again, the most versatile guard pass that there is. And I know that I'm not alone in that opinion. I know that you share it as well. So with that said, tell me about it. Tell me what makes the knee slice so special to you and why you look at this as your baby.
I think for me, it's like the one pass I remember doing since white belt. I don't know. I think like you, I just kind of felt it was the best pass and I just kind of stumbled into it and it felt really good for me. I think also I remember when the day I was taught the pass, I did the pass just automatically to like, they say people's bad side. So people were like hyping me up like, oh my gosh, you passed to the other side. Like, that's so sick. I got a lot of like positive reinforcement right in the beginning that like, this is a really good move for you. So I feel like that kind of like encouraged me to explore it more too. And I think it just kind of felt like an easy goal, especially in the beginning, because I mean, being in the guard and trying to figure out how to pass can be really confusing when you're first starting. It feels like you don't really know what to do. But I remember thinking like, okay, if I just stuff one of their legs in between my legs, I can like go for the knee slice. So I think it just kind of felt like an easy first goal for me when I was first starting out. And it kind of just gave me like just a, like something to do, right? Because a lot of times you just are kind of a bit clueless and you want to just have a direction whenever you're training. So I think that was just my direction I kind of fell into. And then just, you know, if you do a move long enough over enough years, like you're just going to get better and better at it. So as I went up the belt levels, like my skill in doing the pass also increased. So it still continued to work for me. And I just think it's like kind of a must have, you know, in your passing, even if it's not your absolute favorite. I think everyone should at least know how to tie it in with their other passes because it's just, you know, such a strong option.
I agree completely. I, like you, started the knee slice at white belt and my whole journey through to black belt, I always thought, you know, at some point I'm going to discover some master level guard pass. And I'm going to say, well, I don't need this rookie shit anymore. I don't need this knee slice. I've got some fancy dancy thing now. But
yeah,
I really have yet to find a guard pass that is just more efficient and effective in general than the knee slice, right? There's a lot that are more complicated. And there's a lot that in certain situations or for certain body types, they might be a better option.
For sure.
But the knee slice is always there. It's just such a wonderful move. And tell me, you know, mechanically, what is it about the knee slice that you like? Why is it that it just, it appeals to you at such a base level?
I think for me, it's like, I do a lot of long distance passing too. So I like Toriandos and things like that as well. But I mean, once they tie you up in the guard, like, you can't make enough space to start going for that. So I feel like it's a good option to start breaking down their guard if they are able to get a little control. I kind of think of it as like you're in their guard, but you're going directly through it. So both their legs are kind of splitting and parting the way, so to speak, to get through the guard because you don't really have the option to go around the legs anymore since they've tied you up a bit. So it feels like to me you're just like figuring out how to bust through it, you know, kind of like going through two double doors, you open it and you spread them apart and then you're able to walk right through it. So that's kind of how I think of it. Like their legs are the double doors and I'm able to like go directly through it and kind of get past them to start getting past the guard. And I think that can be very surprising sometimes, you know, there's knee cuts where you're doing it more for speed. So you're doing like a flying knee cut. Maybe they just pulled guard and you're flying through their guard, which can be very scary if you're not expecting it. or you can kind of do more of a pressure style knee cut where you're just working to get rid of those frames slowly. But then it gets very scary for the person once you're past and you're just like right there in their face, you know?
Yeah, great points, all of them. You brought up the outside passing and the power of things like Toriando's. And man, I'm not going to take away from that game. But the thing that I have found with a lot of outside or distance passing is, first of all, especially with Toriando's, there's often a reliance on getting good, strong grips on their legs. And you do that enough, that can be murder on your fingers. You got to be careful with that. I am always trying to take care of my fingers, and I try to avoid techniques that rely on a lot of crazy grips or grip strength. And the other thing, too, is I tend to be a shorter, more compact person. And so I personally find it very hard to do outside passing on most people because they tend to have longer limbs than me. It's such a challenge to do an outside pass on someone who's got those big, crazy long legs. I just find, due to my body type, I usually wind up getting in really close and tight and kind of making it a fight inside a phone booth. And that's just the best place to go for the knee slice, right? It's just such a powerful option when you're in tight.
Oh, for sure. And that's when you're like going to be able to chain to other things too. You know, if the knee slice doesn't work, you've got your side smash and your cross grip passing and all of that. So it's just in general a great kind of hub to really start doing any type of pass that's more close distance, like you were saying, because that's, you know, sometimes better for people, but also that's sort of the goal too. Like the distance passing, it's great if you can do it really well and start like closing the distance. But sometimes you got to take little bites out of the guard pass, right? You start in the distance, then you get to the mid, which is like your knee cut, and then you're able to sort of break through and get into the guard pass. So
I'd say the other thing I like about the knee slice is that you're just not giving your opponent that much surface area on your body to fight against. I mean, basically, you're using your knee as this giant wedge, almost like a crowbar, to pry their guard open. And so they've got this massive knee just coming at them. And it's very hard when you're defending a knee cut pass to grab onto anything or get good handles. There's a lot of guard passes, like matador passes, where, yes, you can do them, but you're exposing parts of your body that maybe you don't want to expose. You know, by doing them, you might be giving people access to your head. I hate those guard passes because I don't like people mashing on my face. Sometimes certain guard passes let people counter grip your arms. But with the knee slice, there is just this giant knee splitting your guard open like a crowbar. You can't counter grip someone's knee very easily. So it's just, it's so hard to defend. And that's part of what I love about it personally.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, we all know that feeling of someone knee slicing you and you're just like, just scrambling to try to get something and get space. But then like, you try to throw your top leg in and they're just in there already and you can't use that. And then your bottom leg is pinned and you're just like, you know, you're using your arm still, but it's like, it's not enough to really push someone out, you know, like they're just in there in your space. Yeah, it's great. I mean, I love it. Like, I don't know, it's just, it's got everything. And I feel like once you just get familiar with it, I think kind of with any pass you just decide to put time into, like, that's just going to be your pass. Some people may be put into the side smash, but it's kind of like you were talking about earlier, you know, you're trying to look for that magical passing technique. But I think the magic in it is just the years you spent putting time into getting good at it. I think whatever you throw yourself into, like if you just get reps and reps and reps of that, like over years, you know, it's going to work for you really well just because you've practiced it so much. And got to think like the person on bottom probably hasn't put as many years into defending it, right? So you're probably going to win that battle.
Yeah. It's also what Rafael Lovato Jr. would call a timeless jiu-jitsu technique. It's a move that's going to be just as useful to you right now as it will be 40 years from now. And a lot of techniques don't age like that. You know, there's a lot of people who in their youth, they might really love things like barambolos and matrix back takes. And that's going to get harder to do when you're 60 years old. But man, a knee slice, you can do that at any age. And I think that's part of why it's kind of a collection of those techniques that you see a lot of older people play. It's part of that slow pressure game because it's just so frustrating to deal with. It requires basically no athleticism to do a good knee slice, but it's just so effective at all levels.
Oh, for sure. And I think, I mean, any pass that forces the guard player to kind of play a simple position is going to be really good and timeless because, you know, even if they play some crazy guard, if you can get them to just essentially a half guard position, you know, when you're in the knee slice, you know, the fancy guard play isn't really important anymore. You force them into a simpler game. So no matter what the guard may be, if you can just do that, you can just force them into that path, you know, and there's not really going to be any good creative new way to deal with the knee slice. I think it's good anytime you can force like a half guard or knee slice position. It just simplifies things and it puts you in a good spot.
Well, that's a great point. You can have amazing techniques at your disposal, but if you can't create the situation where you can do those techniques, it doesn't matter. As an example, you know, I love various types of stack passes, but admittedly, against a good person, they're going to make it hard for you to get double unders on them. They're going to make it really hard, especially if they know that you're a stack passer. Whereas the beauty of the knee slice is from headquarters, from half guard, it's right there. Even if you're in full guard, as long as the guard is open, a lot of the time you could just step one of your legs out and then you're right in that knee slice passing position. It's just so easy to get into that position. That's part of the appeal. You don't have to do a lot of setup work to make a good knee slice happen.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, there's attacks you can do from there too, which I mean, I can't really think of a guard pass right now where you can do really strong attacks. Like you've got the cross choke and all that. So even that is like a huge benefit to it. You know, I mean, it's always great to force your opponent into trying to deal with two things at once, because normally you're going to get one or the other. Like if you slap on a cross choke and you're trying a knee slice, either you're going to get the pass because they're worried about the choke, or you're going to get the choke because they're worried about the pass. So it kind of forces them into this like decision where, you know, do they want to tap or do they want to get their guard passed, which is always good to do.
Yeah, I'm primarily a gi player, so this is my jam. I will often try to knee slice into a cross collar. So I know I'm unusual in this because a lot of people, when they go for a knee slice, they go for that far side underhook. But what I like to do is I like to go for a cross collar grip. I find that it's strong enough that if my opponent tries to get up onto their side, they still can't because I'm ramming my forearm right into their throat and it's hard to power through that. And then they have that dilemma where, look, you are simultaneously being attacked by a knee slice, a cross choke, and maybe even something funky with your near side arm if I can get it. It's just a terrible situation to get yourself caught in as the person on the bottom.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, because I mean, for the cross choke, you want them to turn into you. You want them to be on their side, you know? So it's like, they're just kind of going into the choke at that point. And then you can sort of use your knee as you need to keep them at bay. So yeah, it's a super strong option. And I mean, most of the time, like I said, you're either going to get the pass or the submission. So it's like, even if you end up just using it to pass their guard, it's like, that's still a win.
Yeah. Now, this actually makes me want to ask you, what do you do with your hands? Because like I said, there's a lot of different ways that you can play a knee slice. I will generally, when I am going for a knee slice, I like to have my hand on their hip as I'm setting it up. And the reason why is I'm trying to block them off from getting a knee shield on me. I want to keep the entry clear. And then as I move forward through the knee slice, I'm either going for an underhook or I'm going for a cross collar. But what do you do with your hands? I mean, how do you use your hands to kind of defend them and keep them pinned onto the floor as you're completing the pass?
Yeah, I mean, I think it varies a lot. Like, obviously, it depends on their reaction. I think I do a similar thing to you. I try to keep my hand on the hip so that I can make sure I can stop them from bringing in the knee shield. With my other hand, I'm usually pinning their knee to the ground or trying to get a collar grip. I found like, my most common entry, I think, for the knee cut would be from Delahiva. And I normally have some type of collar grip when I go for it. And then I have the hand on the hip. And then I almost sometimes enter like a knee up the middle position initially. So my knee is kind of near their sternum. Because I find that sometimes, you know, when you're trying to enter it from Delahiva, you want to cut the angle hard, you know, and pin their leg to the floor and get your knee to the floor. But sometimes it can be really difficult because they know you're trying to do that. So I found like a good middle ground is that sort of knee up the middle position. And then from there, it's a lot easier to stop them from getting the knee shield because they need to kind of be on their side in order to get the knee shield and get that good half guard position and be able to put that like knee shield pressure into your body to push you out. So if they're straight up and down and their back is pinned to the mat, their knees kind of sticking straight up. So they don't have that angle to put that knee shield pressure into you. So I like going there and just making sure I'm dealing with all of their frames. And then from there, I can start working for my underhook, like you said, getting my knee to the floor, keeping the collar grip if I need to, or I like to switch for an underhook as well. They're trying to sit up on their elbow or anything like that. The underhook is super strong. So one of probably my favorite ways to finish it is double underhooks, honestly, because then I can work to mount really easily. And there's just not really anything they can do with their frames at that point. So I don't know if that made sense. It's like mental jujitsu can be hard to transfer. But yeah.
It 100% makes sense. And actually, I'm so glad you said what you said, because I was wondering if this was going to come up. I'm really happy it did. I would say that when people think of the knee slice, the most common way that people do the knee slice is kind of at a 45 degree angle, where they're not slicing directly like up the person's stomach through to their sternum, but rather they're slicing their knee at a 45 degree angle off to the side. And the reason you do that is because, first of all, it opens up the path to side control, but also, traditionally speaking, sometimes people are afraid that if you go right up the middle, it's going to make it too easy for people to like knee you in the butt and send you forward, right? So for a long time, people said, oh, don't do that, don't do that. But I got to say, one day my instructor came back from a camp. I think he was either with Hicks and Gracie or he was learning from one of Hickson's people. And he demonstrated the up the middle version of the knee slice that you're talking about here. And this is where, for those who don't know, instead of going at a 45 degree angle and trying to kind of cut through to side control, you go straight up, basically from their crotch, right over their stomach, right up their sternum. You're not going at an angle, you're going straight up. And the way that you often make this work, at least in the gi, is you get a cross collar grip and then you drive your knee forward and you use the cross collar to pull them up to get extra force and drive that knee even deeper into their sternum. It's a great way to pass the guard. It's a terrible way to make friends, but it's super effective though. And I think that's what you're talking about, right? That up the middle version?
Yeah, I get a same side collar though. So I get a same side collar. I want the collar grip that I have to be on the side I'm trying to pass to, because this is basically like a long distance cross face. So the easiest way, I think, to establish any kind of pass, no matter what it is to get the head control, right? So a lot of times it can be hard to get this collar grip, obviously, but that's the grip I'm looking for. So I have that anchor, because even in the knee up the middle position, like they're going to be bucking and trying to get out. So it kind of feels like you're riding the bull a little bit and then just slowly closing to the distance. And like you said, it's super uncomfortable. Like you're not going to make friends by going to this position. It sucks, but it's very strong. And that collar grip's really going to help you keep yourself anchored. And then on the other side, I'm keeping the like low underhook, like you were saying, with kind of the hand on the hip, so they can't work to get their knee shield in. They can't try to get any kind of underhook on me. So I like to keep that very, very tight and protect that space.
Yeah, where I use this one a lot, usually my plan A is going to be the kind of classic 45 degree angle knee slice. But sometimes the person on the bottom goes into like crazy defensive mode where they'll do that annoying thing where they'll take their near side arm and they'll try to like hide it under their leg so you can't grab it and pull it up. You know what I'm talking about? They do all of these tricks to try to prevent you from securing the space by their ribs, because they know if you complete a knee slice but you don't have that space, they're just going to come up behind you and dogfight you. But the downside is if someone is doing that nonsense, they kind of have to have their shoulders pinned to the mat, which is not good if you're trying to prevent a guard pass. So what I will often do is as a plan A, I will try that 45 degree angle pass. But if I see that my opponent is shelling up and just being defensive and they're waiting for me to try to do a bad knee slice so they can get up, that's when I switch to that up the middle version, because then I can just use my knee to keep their shoulders pinned onto the mat and make them suffer, which is always fun.
Yeah, for sure. I think I use it similarly. Either like if I don't feel like I can get the entry, like you said, or even if I go for the more traditional one and I feel any kind of resistance or risk if I continue to move forward, I kind of use it as a reset position as well, because doing the knee up the middle is just basically going to pin them to the mat, and that's going to take away a lot of their options for defense. So I use it like whenever I feel I'm going for the traditional knee cut and it's just getting a bit dicey, I'll go to that knee up the middle position just to kind of clean things up, get in front of their legs, all that kind of thing, make sure I have a good collar grip, and then I'll continue to go in for the knee slice. Because once you're in that knee up the middle position, it's very easy to put your knee back down onto the floor once you start going for the knee cut again. Like, you're so far in front of their frames, it's very difficult for them to block you. So it's a really good spot to kind of go to just clean it all up and make sure you don't have anything in your way whenever you're going in for that more traditional knee cut finish.
Now, you talked about going backwards and kind of resetting. And this is one of the coolest things about the knee cut pass, is it's what I would call a low commitment technique. You can try it, and if it doesn't pan out the way that you want, you could just kind of hit Control Z and undo and just go back to half guard or headquarters or wherever you were before. There's a lot of passes that don't work like that. I mean, if you're doing, for example, a Matador pass where you have to drop your head to the ground, sometimes you get halfway through that and then you realize, I'm not going to get this. And this guy's just mashing me in the head now and I can't get back up and I'm kind of screwed. With the knee cut, you don't have that problem. If you get partway through and then you're just not feeling it, you're just not getting the look that you want and you're worried, man, if I keep moving, I'm going to lose this whole thing. Just back up like half a foot and you're back into where you were before. You lost nothing. And that's such a great type of technique where you can try it at no risk to yourself.
Oh, for sure. Those are the best ones. And I mean, I feel like this is also going to encourage you to start chaining your passes, right? Like, I think the power in good passing is just not stopping and knowing how to chain your passes. So taking that one step further, you're not only backing away, but then you're entering a different pass. So you're kind of keeping them in this defending position, which is always the goal. So you always want to know how they're going to defend so you can have an answer for that. So you can stay ahead of them. So like if you go for the knee cut and they are able to knee shield you, you're switching for the crazy dog pass as they're pushing you out, right? So you're still in that position. You're still in that mid passing position and putting pressure on them and stressing out their guard. Or if they start switching their hips and trying to face you, you switch for the side smash. So that's why it's also great. It's just it's a hub for so many different things. So it's like, you just got to know what has to come next, depending on their reaction.
Yeah, it's an amazing waypoint position. You get into kind of that knee slice position. And even if you don't complete the knee slice, if you can get your knee between their legs, and especially if you can pin one of their knees to the floor and put your weight down on top of it, there's so much you could do from there beyond just the knee cut. I mean, you can do kind of like hip switch passes. You can slingshot around. You can stand up. If you're an a-hole like me, you can just choke the person right then and there, right? I mean, I've had that happen so many times where people get really upset about the knee slice and they're doing everything they can to defend it. And they drop their hands down to start messing with my leg and my knee. So I just choke them, right? It's an amazing option.
Yeah, because usually they bring their hands down, right? To like kind of push your knee out and defend. And you're just like, well, thank you. Now your neck isn't protected at all and I'll just choke you. Like, thank that.
Yeah, I stopped doing that. You know, when I first started defending against the knee cut, I was shown all of these different options where you can mess with the person's leg. And what I found is just you're giving people open access to your neck if you reach your hands down and you try to stop a knee cut pass that's already halfway done. So now, as much as it sucks, my general option is I just eat the knee cut. I just let people make it hurt for me and I just learn to deal with it. Because if you reach your hands down and start messing with their legs, you're actually just making it easy for them to get up to your neck, which is the last thing you want to do when someone's passing your guard.
For sure. I mean, I think a lot of people get distracted with trying to deal with the legs when someone's passing them to try to, like, I guess maybe stuff them back into the guard. But really, your main goal should be to never let someone grab your head or your collar when they're passing you. Because basically, like, you're allowing them to punch you, you know, if this is a self-defense kind of situation. If you're not blocking and protecting your head, they're just punching you in the face. So you need to really make sure you're controlling that. And then the recovery is going to be much easier. Even if they do pass your legs, if you didn't give up that collar control or that head control, you're probably going to be able to scramble away, defend, get your legs back into play. But if they're able to anchor to your upper body, you know, it's like they're controlling your head. They're pretty much controlling your whole body. So it's definitely like that should be the main goal. But it's so tempting to just like try to address the legs.
It's very much a thing that rookies do, right? They often look at what they think is the root of the problem. And usually it's the thing that's coming right at them, which in this case is it's the knee. And they think, man, if I just grab this leg, maybe I can slow it down. But look, that's a hard battle to fight, right? You're using your two little weenie hands. This person has the advantage of gravity and momentum, and they're driving their freaking knee right at you. It's hard. I mean, I find that the best thing to do there is try to keep safe. And when they bring their knee through, get up to my side, dog fight them or turtle or do something. I just feel like if you reach out and you try to stop that leg, it's kind of a losing battle. And unfortunately, if you do that, you're now exposing not just your collar, but also your arm. So if the person can then do that traditional like judo jujitsu style pass where they grab your arm and they pull it up off the ground, and that's going to suck too. So sometimes the defense is a bit counterintuitive. And I think that can be the case for the knee slice.
Oh yeah. I mean, I still fall into the trap of like wanting to not do that. Like you get stressed, you know, you get stressed that they're coming at you. So it's like just something you have to practice. Yeah. I mean, I would say probably one of the best defenses, if you can catch it like in time, would be, like I was saying, blocking them from getting the head grip, but then somehow recovering your bottom leg and bringing it kind of across their hip so that then you can start blocking them and start getting maybe Della Riva or something like that. So if you can switch your hips just enough to sort of get that bottom leg out, then you can start, you know, blocking that space again and start getting your guard back. I would say that's probably one of the best maybe early defenses. But I mean, obviously, you have to catch it in time to be able to do that.
Now, as the knee slicer, the person on top, we've talked about how one of the cool things about this technique is the ability to bail out and go back to neutral if it's not working as you expected. But a mistake that a lot of beginners make is they don't know the signs. They can't tell the difference between this is a good knee cut pass versus this is a bad one. And the issue with the knee cut is if you're not properly controlling the person on the bottom, when you knee cut, if the person on the bottom is defending properly, you're going to go right across them and they're going to come up behind you. They're probably going to dogfight you or single leg you. There's a lot of things that they can do. And one of the important lessons for the person doing the knee slice is to know those warning signs of, okay, I should not go any further right now. Because if I do, they're just going to come up behind me. What are the tips that you have for especially a newer person to identify, like, this knee slice is not going the way I expected. I need to clear more hurdles before I advance.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the first red flag would be just them having the underhook on you. You don't want to keep going if they have that, because like you said, they're going to come up on their knees and start dogfighting you, right? They're going to be able to get access to going around the back. So definitely don't go any further if you don't have that underhook, which is why I like to do the low kind of underhook initially so that I can make sure I don't leave any space for them to try to pummel and get that underhook. So that would definitely be the first main thing I would say. Don't continue to go forward if they have the underhook. It can be hard too if they're turning into you a lot. Like, I know someone who's very good at half guard, they can kind of turn into you, like be on their side and almost start to sort of turtle to sort of then be able to get access to pummel the underhook. So you definitely want to be careful if they're sitting up or hiding their head really well when you're going in for the knee cut. I wouldn't probably keep going if they're hiding their head very well and on their side. So something I like to do to avoid this is either one, if I have a collar grip, I will use, and this is a same side collar grip, I'll use the grip on their jaw and I'll post my other hand on the floor on the other side and I'll lean into their jaw. So I'm basically, instead of them being able to turn their head and face me for like a good half guard, I'm prying their chin so that I'm forcing their head the other direction. And I'm sort of putting my weight in my hand on the other side and just forcing them to look away from me. So this is forcing them to kind of be stretched out rather than being able to sort of be in a ball and start hiding their head to look for that good half guard position. So that's one way I like to deal with it. And then the other way would be maybe if I can get an underhook on the arm instead of the collar grip, the same side I'm knee cutting to, I'll use my head under their chin. So this kind of does the same thing where I'm just using upward pressure to force their chin up so they're looking to the sky, and then I can sort of spread them out that way as well. And then I like cut my knee kind of down instead of out to the side. I think this is another probably thing people do when they're trying to finish the knee cut. And I think it causes a lot of injuries too. They try to finish the knee cut by going to the side. So when the person's controlling their ankle, it sort of puts a lot of stress on your MCL, like torques your knee if you don't have flexible enough hips. So I would say sitting your hip into them and then kind of knee cutting. So you're knee cutting down and thinking about pushing their bottom leg away from you so that as you slide, you can get connected hip to hip with them. And then once you're on the ground, your butt's kind of blocking them from getting that bottom leg in. And that's going to, you know, open up the space for side control, but also protect your knee from getting that torque, which I know a lot of people get injured that way.
Yeah, that's a really good point. A lot of the time when someone is halfway through a knee cut and that person on the bottom is holding onto their leg for dear life, sometimes people kind of twist their leg in all sorts of crazy directions to try to get it free. But if you're doing a knee cut properly, you should really never have to twist your knee. it's a linear motion for the most part. You're kind of going from point A to point B in a straight line with the knee cut pass. So usually what's better is if you're getting stuck, rather than trying to twist your knee and risk an injury, you kind of want to adjust your hips and your whole sort of body to realign everything in one direction. What you don't want is where you twist your knee at a funny angle and you wind up moving forward but leaving your knee behind, because then the person's going to come up on a single or something. And if your knee is already twisted, it's just a recipe for injury.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would say if you can't even adjust it, I would abandon it and I would go to more like a, I was feeling a lot of stress on my knee and I couldn't sort of reset it like you were saying and use more of my hip pressure. I would probably just go to more of like a 3/4 mount. So I'd start bringing my knee to the middle and either like be able to reset from there, like we were talking about with the knee up the middle, or just bringing it all the way to the other side and working for like 3/4 mount, which is also a great position. So I think it's just kind of knowing when you should maybe switch to something else because you're in danger or your knee is getting torqued, or, you know, there's other options for sure.
Yeah. You touched on a lot of things that kind of align with what I've always thought. With the knee slice, when I'm going for the knee slice, you know, with most guard passes, part of the way that you complete the guard pass, there's kind of two things that you're going to have to do for almost any guard pass. One is the person on the bottom, you want to have their shoulders pinned to the floor. For a lot of guard passes, if the person is able to get up on their side, it gets risky for you as the passer because now they're opening up underhooks and dogfights and turtle and all sorts of stuff. The other thing too is if you are going from a pass to, say, side control, you need to make sure that you can open up an elbow knee space by the person's ribs and hip so that you can land there. If the person on the bottom has closed off that space, and you see this a lot with the knee cut where people will do this, I talked about it earlier, they'll do this thing where they take their near side arm and they'll hide it under their leg. And the reason they do that is they're hoping that if you continue, you're not going to land in that elbow knee pocket. You're just going to go flying right past them and then they can come up. So those are kind of the two things I'm always asking myself when I go for the knee slice. Number one is, can I pin this person's shoulders onto the mat, both shoulders onto the mat, so they can't get up onto their side, either towards me or away from me? And then the second thing is, if I am trying to land in, say, side control, have I opened up that elbow knee space? And if I can't do those two things, that's when I kind of put a pause on the knee slice and make sure I can fix those problems first. So all of those examples that we talked about, like getting the far side underhook, grabbing either the near side or the far side collar or the arm or twisting the jaw, the purpose of all of those things is to force the person on the bottom to be shoulders down on the mat. You're trying to prevent them from getting to their side. And then, yeah, the reason why you would do things like grab their near side arm, that's to make a pocket. It's to clear open that space so that you can land there. And I would generally encourage people, if you can't do those two things, then it's probably a sign that you don't want to go for the knee cut quite yet. You want to clear open those options first. Otherwise, you're going to sail past the person and they're going to dogfight you and you'll probably be on the bottom.
Absolutely. And then it's just kind of a waste of energy. Right? Like passing, sometimes you need to slow it down and just, like you said, make sure you have certain things dealt with before you keep continuing to go forward, because you don't want to lose a good position and have to start all over. So there's no reason to really rush it. But yeah, I totally agree with what you say. It's, you got to keep them flat. You got to open up that knee to elbow space. And the knee cut's great because you can use your whole like leg to kind of push their leg away, but also the weight of your hip and all of that. So it's a great way. Another great pass for doing that is the cross grip pass, or the crazy dog pass. I would say like that's the only other pass that sort of fights for my like love, you know, like the knee cut's definitely first love, but like that cross grip pass is also insanely strong because it directly attacks that knee to elbow connection like you were talking about. So it makes it very, very difficult for the person to close that and start recovering their guard again.
Absolutely. Just an awesome technique overall. I would love to know your opinion here on how you change the way you play this under different rule sets. So a lot of what we've talked about is requiring collar grips to be available. I'm primarily a gi player, so those are always there for me. But one of the cool things about the knee cut is it's just as effective in no gi. However, you do have to obviously alter your grips a bit. How do you tend to play this differently depending on the rule set there?
Yeah, like the opposed to gi and no gi.
Yeah, yeah. Or even under just if under the gi or under no gi, if you pivot it under different rule sets as well, I'd be curious to know. I'm assuming you probably don't. I mean, you know, if you're playing under different no gi rule sets, I don't think there's any rule change that's really going to result in you knee cutting differently. But if there is, I definitely would want to hear about it.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm like you. I mostly do gi as well just because I like it better. But I think it's important to do both. So I do train no gi as well. I would say for me, since there's so much less control with no-gi, you don't have the collar grip to sort of keep yourself anchored and in that like tight pressure style kind of knee cut. I'm most of the time going for more of a quick sort of flying knee cut to sort of just slide past the guard, because it's just, it's easier for the person on bottom to push you out when it's no-gi. You don't have the grips. I think most of the time you're just thinking about flying through with the knee cut and then attacking the back. Right? Like, it's hard to even hold the person in side control. So I think with no-gi, I would probably go for more of a quick kind of style knee cut using passing chains, going for side smash, then quickly changing for the knee cut. I do a little bit more distance style passing as well for no-gi. So it's just kind of like more, I think, a timing thing when you do it in no-gi. It's a little bit more difficult to force it. In the gi, I feel like you've got lots of grips to sort of help you out there. As far as rule sets, I mostly compete under IBJJF. So it's not really, of course, your goal is always to submit, but you have the point system. So I got very used to being a points player. So I look for dominant positions and then I like to submit from dominant positions, which, I mean, in general, that's better to do anyways. Like, it's hard to catch a submission when you're not in a place like the back or side control or mount. You got to be a little bit more quick and it's a little bit riskier. So I wouldn't say normally do that, but I think if I were doing a sub only, I would definitely be looking for that cross choke more from the knee cut. And I wouldn't be so worried about finishing it. I would probably be looking for that grip more and maybe thinking of like Bravo chokes, that kind of thing. Probably practicing more that style. But even so, I mean, I know with even sub only, if I'm able to get the pass, I'm also more likely to be able to get the submission as well. So either way, it like kind of puts me in a good spot, which I think is, you know, one of the great things about it. It's a pass, but it's also a place you can, you know, threaten the submission.
Yeah, you bring up a great point about how, I mean, this is a conversation that comes up a lot when you're talking about the gi, no gi debate and divide. In no gi, a lot of the time, speed is your friend just because you lack the controls to hold a person in a position for long. And that's probably why, now that I think about it, when you look at no gi knee cut players like Andrew Wiltsey or Fionn Davis, you know, watching them do a knee cut, it's like watching an assault. They're going as fast as they possibly can to make it happen. But a lot of the people I know in the gi who do the knee cut, it's much more slow and measured. And that's because in the gi, if you get halfway through a knee cut, you can just camp there. You can halt, lock in your grips, and just make the person on bottom suffer and panic a bit. And that kind of psychological warfare is very, very powerful.
Oh, absolutely. I really think of it as like when I'm in the gi and I get to like that knee up the middle position and I have the collar grip, I'm like, I'm riding the bull now. Like, I'm on one of those like mechanical bulls and I'm just like riding it out because I know I'm in such a good spot and I have such good control that I just need to wait it out and stay in there and just slowly close the distance. But you just don't have that in no gi, you know, you don't have that collar grip. So it's just got to be played a little bit different. It's still super strong, but I would be thinking going for the knee cut and trying to get my knee to the floor immediately if I'm in no gi, because I think if I don't get there, it's going to be a bit hard to stay in the right position to finish it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting because talking about the gi and IBJJF rules specifically, one of the other cool things about the knee cut is you have the ability to do some point farming there. You can knee cut someone, complete the pass, and just give them a glimmer of hope. You know, when they try to re-guard, just let them reestablish just a quarter guard, let them lock their legs around your ankle, and then just knee cut them again, and you get the pass points again. It's so amazing.
Oh, yeah. I'm one of those people for sure. We call them a pass hold, right? Just pass, and then you let them have it, and you pass again. Like, you don't try to submit them. You just keep racking up the points. I definitely have been guilty of that for sure. Like, I still love to get the finish, but like, man, it's not nice, but it is pretty satisfying to be able to do that. But also, like, I think I've just gotten so comfortable with the knee cut position that I would much rather, if I feel like they're recovering, switch my hips and go back to the knee cut, because I feel like my butt's now blocking them from getting their bottom leg. So I don't feel like they're going to recover. So I also just feel very comfortable there. So I feel it's just, especially for someone who's a bit smaller, I just would rather, you know, them recover to my like kneecap position than like a half guard personally. I feel like I can keep that knee to elbow space close better if I do that.
Yeah, absolutely. The knee cut position is a very powerful waypoint where kind of you can stop there. You got so many options. The person on the bottom has so few. This is a level of strategy that I've heard a lot of people talk about. And it's a very important way to think about jiu-jitsu. I think a lot of people come in thinking about techniques they want to do, but I find it's often better rather than thinking in your head, hey, I want to do a knee cut here. Just thinking, hey, I want to get to knee cut position. Because if I can get to kind of a sort of a headquarters-y type position where I can angle the person and get into sort of a knee cut angle, I have so many options there. Once you get there, you can be pretty assured that a pass is going to happen. I find that a lot easier than thinking of, okay, I want to do this technique. I just think to myself, I want to get to this powerful waypoint where I have so many options and they have so few.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, if you think about it in that position, you're already taking care of one of their leg frames, right? You're pinning it to the ground. So like, if you can keep control of their top leg, you're going to pass, right? So it's just, you're taking away options for them right from the get-go. So it's just, anytime you can do that, like, you're in a great spot, right? So it's just a great thing for you to try to do.
Yeah. Now, question for you here. You talked earlier about how you knee slice to the right, which is, I mean, I guess the first question I have for you is, are you right-handed or left-handed or ambidextrous person?
I don't know. I'm between not ambidextrous and ambidextrous, I guess, because I'm definitely right-handed, but then I do things to the left as well. So I don't really know what you would call that. I think I don't know. I have a weird combination, which ended up being pretty handy. But yeah, but when I'm playing guard, I feel like I do a lot of things more traditional. Like I still play De La Hiva with my left leg hooking in, which I think most people probably do that. So I don't reverse that. I feel like it's really just my passing. And I think it's because when I'm standing, I like to have my left foot in front. For whatever reason, maybe I should have like took up boxing or something. I don't know. I like to have that stance. And then I like still using my dominant hand, obviously, for the collar grip. So it just felt like super natural for me to go to that side and then still be able to use my dominant hand to grab the collar. So for me, it just happened that way. I don't know. It's just what was comfortable.
Interesting, because I can see going for a left-handed, which is actually a right side knee cut, to be a really interesting option. Me personally, I'm right-handed and I play almost everything right-handed. But usually what I do is depending on the look I'm getting from my training partner, I have certain passes I like to do to the left side and certain passes that I like to do to the right side. And the knee cut, I always do to the left side. So if I'm going to the right, I do other passes most of the time. But it makes me think, man, if you could switch it up, because so many people on the bottom, they're going to kind of force you into a position that assumes your right leg is forward, right? So many people, especially when they're thinking they're going to do De La Hiva or headquarters, they're expecting that. And if you go backwards, you're going to catch a lot of people off guard by knee cutting to the other direction. Even with left-handed people, I don't see many people knee cut to the other side. The person on top who's standing kind of gets to dictate the position because they get to choose which leg they get to lead with. And usually the person on the bottom is just responding to that. But yeah, if you were to switch that up and knee cut to the other side, I could see that catching so many people off guard.
Yeah. Because I think, like I said, like a lot of people play De La Hiva with their left leg hooking in. So I think it just kind of throws people off when I'm leading with my left leg. But I'm like you, I have passes to both sides. Like I don't knee cut normally to both sides, but I just have other things I do to the other side, which I think is fine. I think sometimes people feel like they need to do everything on both sides, but you really don't. You just need to know what you do on each side. And it can be different. Even with guards, like you don't have to play De La Hiva on both sides. You just need to know how to get back to your good side or what else you're going to do if they end up giving you the other leg, which can be very annoying. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. The thing about the knee cut is you're pretty much always going to be doing a knee cut with your lead leg. I can't really envision a way to do a knee cut with your trailing leg, right? It just doesn't really make sense. So the only way that you're going to have ambidextrous knee cuts is if you're switching and doing ambidextrous stances and switching from lefty to righty, right? And you can do that, but I think most people kind of don't. They tend to have one leg they like to lead with, and that's usually going to be the leg that they knee cut with. So that can be a tell that you can use. If you think the person is going to knee cut you, whichever leg they're leading with, that kind of dictates the side they're going to go to. They're going to knee cut most of the time to the other side.
Yeah.
So if the person leads with their right, they're going to knee cut with to the left most of the time. If they lead with their left, they're probably going to knee cut to the right.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I've definitely I've had training partners I've been training with for years, so they know what I want to do. And so they'll try to force me to have my other leg in front, right? Because then they know I'm not able to go for the pass I really like to go for. I mean, there are ways to kind of switch back to the good side you want. It's not easy, but you kind of learn maybe if they did De La Riva on my right leg, like they like to do, and I can't stuff their leg to go for the knee cut like I want to, I'll keep their leg on the outside and then I'll bring my knee up the middle and I'll start breaking the De La Riva hook and then I'll start spreading them open and start going to the side I want to go. So there is ways to get around it, but yeah, it becomes like a little strategic kind of thing, right? Like where they know what you want and you know what they want. So it's like whoever can kind of break through that and get what they want is going to probably win the position.
Right. Now, do you alter the way that you play the knee cut depending on your opponent? And particularly what I'm asking here is, body type, body size, dimensions. If you're in there knee cutting someone in your own weight class, is that the same way you're going to do the knee cut if you're in there with a 250-pound bodybuilder? Or do you find you have to make adjustments?
Probably adjustments for sure. Yeah, I think for someone my size, I'm pretty confident getting the knee up the middle position, I'm going to be able to stay in there, right? Because their strength isn't going to be more than mine, really. So I feel like I can ride the bull and sort of stay in the position and fight for it. Someone who's a bit bigger, I'm kind of ready just to give it up if I need to. And I think maybe this is why small people become technical pretty quickly. They learn that if they try to force a position too hard, they're just going to lose everything. So they need to know how to chain things. So I would say I'd just be ready for the next thing. So a lot of times for me, that's trying to go for the knee cut on someone bigger and they do get the knee shield. So I know from there, I'll probably switch to cross grip passing because I don't want to get pushed all the way back out and waste this position and have to start from long distance again. So I'll try to weave and go for that cross grip or crazy dog pass as they're pushing me out so that I can continue to pass. And this is a good pass for people who are bigger than you too, because it's just so strong. You can sort of just use your whole body weight to lay on them and force them to deal with it. And then I would say I'm also ready on someone bigger to chase the back. So someone who's bigger than me, it's going to be hard to just usually hold them in side control because their frames are so strong. They're doing that bench press, and bench pressing you off of them. So I'm ready to move, top spin, attack the back, all that stuff. And even on someone bigger than me, if I get on their back, I can just be a tiny little backpack that they can't get off and start threatening my chokes and all of that. And no one's neck is strong, right? So I think on someone big, I'd probably be thinking more in that kind of style.
Yeah, I will say this about the knee cut. I mean, every technique is going to change if you're doing it against someone massively larger, right? I mean, look, leverage is great and all, but given enough of a size and strength mismatch, sometimes people can just Hercules their way out of things. But with the knee cut, it's maybe one of the hardest techniques to just beast mode your way out of. Even if the person is 100 pounds bigger than you, if they're on the bottom with their shoulders on the mat and your knee is driving into their sternum, it's going to suck for them kind of no matter what. The one thing that you do have to be mindful of, like you said, is explosive power from the person on the bottom. And the way that this often manifests from the knee cut pass is they'll do that knee to the butt escape, right? Where they basically, because they can't really do a typical power bridge upa from there. It's not going to work. With the knee cut, if you're doing it against a bigger person, yes, you do have to be mindful of a big explosive power bump where they knee you in the butt and try to send you flying. But other than that, it's a pretty good position because you still have the benefit of being up on both of your legs and having mobility. So if they do kick you in the ass and send you flying, you can just kind of pivot and swing around and wind up in a better position, go all the way around them and wind up in side control on the other side. There's so many options you can do from there. And that kind of versatility is why I think the knee cut is such a staple.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the knee up the middle position is really going to help avoid that too. I think like they have to be on their side, you know, to be able to use that, like that big bump on your butt. So I think just doing the position, you're going to learn kind of how to avoid that too. But yeah, like you said, even if you aren't able to, like you still have pretty good mobility and you're able to switch to other things. And I mean, I would say the most annoying thing for me dealing with the knee cut is if they are able to kind of go to more of like a sit up guard where they feed the lapel. So they'll kind of sit up and they'll feed it through your leg. Like say you had a knee up the middle position and they'll feed the lapel through your leg and they'll sort of start trying to sit up from here. And now if you continue to knee cut, you're kind of giving them what they want. So I would say that's probably the most frustrating thing people will do. If they do that, then you're going to kind of have to switch your strategy and sort of go knee up the middle and then knee to probably the other side. But yeah, it's definitely like it's a pass that I think if you know the risks, you can sort of shut them down pretty easily.
Yeah, I just think that it's such an essential staple. I mean, there's a lot of things at white belt that they teach you. And then as you get more experienced, you realize, I don't really know why they actually taught me this so early because there's better stuff to do. You know, the example I always give is the pendulum sweep or the scissor sweep. They're fine, but they're not super high percentage compared to some of the other options you can do. Whereas the knee slice is a bona fide essential technique. It's going to work at all levels, all body types, shapes, and sizes. It's just one of the must-learn techniques for everybody.
For sure. Yeah. And I think it just kind of helps you like start understanding how guard passes sort of start connecting together while not having to learn something extremely complicated. Like I feel like the side smash, I mean, it's a great staple too, but it's a little bit more complicated than the knee cut. In my opinion, it's just as strong, but like you have to normally be a bit bigger so you know how to put your weight, or if you're small you have to really know where to put your weight. So I think it can be a little bit harder to learn. So I think the knee cut's a good kind of first look at what maybe your options can be when you stuff a leg and you're in that closer distance passing. So I think, yeah, like you said, it's an absolute must with passing. And I think too, for me, because I got so comfortable with the knee cut at white belt, I even when I would do sweeps, I would be looking for that position right away. So I think it kind of will help teach you how to start connecting even passes from your sweeps. So normally when you sweep someone, you've got a few seconds before they're going to realize, ooh, I need to get my guard back, because they're still thinking about the fact that they got swept. So if you can, you know, sweep and then look for this knee cut position, you're staying ahead of the game, you know, because you don't really want to sweep and then normally back away and start doing distance passing. If you can, you want to really take advantage and get in really close and try to start keep connecting all of your chains and go from your sweep right to your pass.
Nice, nice. Well, let's talk about the instructionals here. I mean, if people, first of all, if they're on a budget and they want to just get some quick hit knee slice education, obviously the answer is follow Heather on Instagram and subscribe on YouTube. But let's say people want to kick it up to the next level. How do you teach the knee slice? What's your method for teaching this to people? And how does that reflect on your instructional? What can people expect if they were to grab that knee slice instructional from you?
Yeah, for sure. I think the way I like to approach it initially is kind of just going over the entry for the knee slice, like what you're looking for. And I call it kind of the perfect knee slice. Because I think if you learn this, you can know better how to deal with what they're doing to you, because you know what you're wanting. You know what the goal is. So you sort of learn this perfect knee slice position. So I kind of go over how to enter it, splitting their leg so that they're not able to even get any frames. So I'm teaching, you know, how to deal with that top leg, that knee shield leg, because that's, if you can deal with that and you can get the other leg pinned, you're going to be able to pass. So I go over that a lot. I also go over how to deal with the reverse Stella Hiva hook. So I tell them how to, you know, get into the knee cut and not even let the person have that hook. Because that's also a really good way to defend the knee cut, is to kind of trap their leg so they can't continue forward to knee cut. So I go over that. And then I go over how to get to it from Stella Hiva. But I think it's good because, you know, I go over such a general view of how to just get a perfect knee cut that you can really apply it to any position. So it gives you just kind of, even if you aren't in Stella Hiva, you can sort of find this position and do the knee cut. And then I also go over some common mistakes. So I'll have some clips in there of people doing the knee cut. And then I'll go in and sort of just point out what they're doing wrong and go over some common mistakes, which I think is very helpful because, I mean, most people sort of have the same issues with it. So I think sometimes when you're watching an instructional, you go through all of it, you feel like you understand it, and then you still run into problems. So I think it's helpful to have that portion of it where, you know, you can go back and be like, oh yeah, like that happened to me too. And so that's in there too. So you can go back and sort of like troubleshoot on your own a little bit.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about the knee cut as well, is that your opponent's responses are pretty predictable. There's only a handful of things they're ever going to do. And if you don't know the answer to those things, they can stop you. So I think it's great that you're making it a point of specifically responding to those concerns so that people are equipped to know how to deal with them when they inevitably happen. But one more time for the people in the back, if people want to follow you on Instagram or subscribe on YouTube or check out your courses, how do they go about doing that, Heather?
Yeah, for sure. So you can find the link on my Instagram. My Instagram is Heather_MorganBJJ. And I have a link in my bio that will take you to my YouTube. It'll take you to where I like to do my strength and conditioning. It'll take you to my courses, all of that stuff. So you can find it on there. You can also just search me on YouTube and then I'll pop up there. And yeah, I mean, I'm going to have a website here pretty soon, but it's not up and running yet. So I would say the best way right now to find my courses would be through my Instagram. I think I also put them on my like story highlight. I have a portion that says courses, so you can also find the links through there if that's easier.
Awesome. And I know if everyone out there is like me, you've probably already forgotten everything Heather said. So good news, I will put those links in the show notes. If you want to follow her on Instagram, again, I definitely recommend giving her a follow there. Subscribe on YouTube or check out the courses. Put all of those links in the show notes. So just open up your podcast player, go to info, notes, description, whatever it's called. You should be able to find it in just a quick tap or two to get there. I'm sure Heather would definitely appreciate the follows and the support. I'll also put a link to our stuff. Everything we make is on bjjmentalmodels.com. That includes well over 250 hours of free education. Audio that you can grab there, plus our weekly newsletter. You can sign up for free, unsubscribe at any time. Always suggest people give that a go. And beyond that, our premium service is also available there. That's where you can get access to our massive content course library. If you are really interested in jujitsu, philosophy, mental models, strategy, tactics, that is the best resource I'm aware of for those kinds of conversations. You will also get direct coaching from our all-star black belt review team. I'm pretty sure, Heather, that you can endorse that because I think a lot of your buddies are on there. We've got Rachel Ranshaw and Amanda Bruce on there as well. So if you want to get coached by people of that caliber, you can just sign up there. There's a free trial and you can unsubscribe at any time. Again, I'll put a link in the show notes, but the link for those who want to try it right now is bjjmentalmodels.com. But Heather, thanks so much for coming by. This is a great one. This is my favorite type of episode to do where we kind of just unpack one specific mechanical technique. There's a lot of people out there who, you know, they'll see instructionals on how to do these moves and maybe their instructor will show it. But those conversations are always focused on, here's the steps to follow. There's usually not a dialogue about, why the fuck would I even do this? Like, when do I do this? How do I do this? What could go wrong? And that kind of conceptual stuff just helps people so much. So big thanks for coming by and sharing all of this.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed this. I mean, talking about jujitsu is like my favorite thing ever, like those conversations you have after training and all that. And I feel like this is just kind of creating that environment, you know, like we're just sitting on the mat chatting. And that's like my favorite thing ever. So I really appreciate you inviting me on.
You're most welcome. I appreciate it as well. And I always appreciate the people who take the time every week to listen here. So big thank you to you as well. We'll talk to you next week. Take care.